Hi, I'm Gordon Lamphere, and welcome to the Real Finds Podcast, the podcast where we have real conversations with key entrepreneurs, activists, and researchers who are shaping the real estate industry and, as a result, our world. On today's podcast, we'll be speaking with Kristen O'Mara. Kristen is the Senior Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at Jaeger, a global leader in enterprise procurement and supply collaboration. On the podcast, we talk about trade, supply chains, and tariffs. Most pressingly, we dive into asset classes and economic sectors and the regions that are most affected by the Trump-China trade dispute. Ultimately, if you're interested in industrial space, if you're interested in manufacturing and how the Trump-China trade dispute could affect your portfolio, this podcast is well worth a listen. Kristen, thank you for hopping on the podcast today.
Gordon, good morning, good afternoon. It's my pleasure. Look forward to our discussion.
So what got you into the whole world of understanding global trade and tariffs? How did you eventually, or how did you first get into the industry?
Well, from my perspective, I've been in supply chain for 25 plus years. It's always been one of my life ethos to maintain an insatiable curiosity. I call it the curiosity of a two-year-old. I always ask why, always be turning things inside out. My role is one of meeting with our executives within our accounts on a repeated basis to help them with their North Star, their trajectory, their goals, objectives, KPIs. So tariff topics are of the utmost interest right now. Half of the companies that I've talked to don't have a cohesive plan in place. That makes, I think, Jaeger in an enviable position to be able to lean in and provide assistance from my perspective. So it's a good fit from a software technology enablement perspective. They'll still need help on the people and policy side, but we have ways to help them ensure that their solutions they do put in place are repeatedly able to be analyzed and scalable for their organizations, depending on their size and complexity.
So just at a, you know, at a super, super high level, what's going on right now in tariffs from the supply chain side? And what's the general impact on manufacturing businesses around the country?
So from my perspective, we're at sort of a somewhat unprecedented time since probably a period of about 100 years ago when there was Smoot legislation that went into place. That's a different topic for a different day and probably only likely to retain the interest of the most, educationally focused folks. So from my perspective, what we're seeing today is really, depending on which side of the fence you sit on from a policy perspective, is rather unprecedented. We've put in legislation across, executive orders that are, trying to leverage IEPA or national security measures as a way to ensure a supply chain that has stability, a supply chain that has, I'll call it, locality contemplated for it. There's a great deal of complexity to unpack within it. I have worked with a number of scholars and policy experts to understand and make sure I'm prepared to have a dialogue and discussion with my customers on the topic. But what you have in place is effectively a tax. The tax is borne by the supplier as they move goods in transit into another location. That tax greatly varies depending on the product, depending on the region, depending on the country in which it comes from. There are exceptions to those. There's organizations like the World Trade Organization that keep account of those, and you can navigate those. But effectively, you have in place a mechanism which, if you're studying it from a policy perspective, could be in place for a number of reasons. But effectively, the biggest challenge, I think, at a 30,000 macro foot level is the level of unpredictability we have presently happening with the tariffs, right? So they're in this 90-day pause period at present, which has allowed people, whether it was the bond markets, whether it was the Walmarts or the large retailers of the world, that sort of leaned in to tell our executive office to say, we've got to cool these down. We've got to understand the implications of these. We've got to understand the dollar impact. We've got to understand the retaliatory aspects of this. We've got to understand that, you know, supply chains don't move overnight aspects of this. So there's a lot to get your head wrapped across as you contemplate your strategy for tariffs within your organization, you know, from my perspective.
And how does that boil down on like a component and raw material level? Are we talking about is like a broad issue across many sectors, or are we talking about you know, a sector by sector or component by component issue that, you know, there are going to be some sectors of the manufacturing or import market that are vastly more affected than others?
There will absolutely be some impacted more than others. The impact at this point, because of the reach, there's 70 plus countries in the executive order that was announced within the last 30 days. And that is unprecedented in its scope. The majority of our trade, over 90%, is done with 7-8 countries. So arguably, it impacts those in those 7 or 8 countries in a massively and meaningful way. And the answer is it varies because it could be material specific in the case of tariffs on steel or the tariffs on aluminum. You have to prove, for example, if you're bringing steel in from Canada, that you have the compliance necessary to ensure there's no Chinese content to that steel, by way of example. In the electronics space right now, they're sort of smiling because there's an exception for the Apples and the HPs of the world that was negotiated at the executive office level in order to say we won't have product to offer if you put these in place, or it will be not economically viable and will put an undue burden on the population. So depending on what sector you sit in, depending on the products that go into your materials, one of the things that's constantly discussed in supply chain is this concept of a bill of materials, the parts and pieces, the cost of goods sold, whether it's a integrated circuit board or the raw material plastics that go into an automobile part, for example. You have to have your head wrapped around an understanding from a impact perspective to the different components within your products, not just the products in and of themselves.
So I know you mentioned individual products. Where do you foresee the biggest disruption in the market in terms of those individual products? And should we be the most worried about, I'm guessing, China, because that's a market that doesn't currently have the same pause that we're seeing in other sections. Is that where we should be most concerned as importers or manufacturers?
So I think from my perspective, the folks that have gotten the attention of the executive office most acutely and specifically are the retail leaders. So Home Depot, Walmart, et cetera, approached Trump last week and let him know that by July 4th holiday in particular, with the weeks in front of it, which is a major retail event, there will be store shelves that are empty. Is that shock and awe? Is that exaggerated? I don't know that it is. China is specifically and acutely and will continue to be they are the same size as a manufacturing capacity as the next nine largest countries combined. Our GDP is 8% manufacturing. If you take out the administrative jobs, the executive leader jobs of the manufacturing sector, we're less than 4% of our economy is predicated or impacted by manufacturing. But if we are wishing to receive goods and products from the rest of the world, which we are a global supply chain today, and that cannot change overnight, that cannot change within 4 years, we have to be prepared for there are some impacts.
So in terms of those impacts, I know, you know, there's going to be some that there's really limited workaround to, and maybe the only workaround is increasing costs. But are there operational reengineering tools that businesses can look at in terms of restructuring their supply chains, or are we just, you know, pardon my French, shit out of luck?
So from my perspective, I think the most challenging things for executive senior leaders within organizations is the policy uncertainty, right? So one of the arguments of the three major ones that I hear bantered around is that we want to have folks relocate their manufacturing, global suppliers, the BMWs that are in South Carolina, the Honda Motors that are in Maryville, Ohio. We want them on our shores for security purposes, for national defense purposes, for job availability. The jobs have a very clear impact when it comes to voter turnout. Something's got to clearly happen. We cannot maintain this level of unpredictability that's going on with on again, off again, stopped, paused. The worst case, most of my customers have an A and a B strategy, but they can invoke neither at this point in time because of the uncertainty that's in place, right? It'd be somewhat risky to say, hey, we're going to put a new location in Canada to sell goods and services to minimize our tariffs when this could be all reversed. Some are arguing if it's not done by the courts in the course of the next 12 months, surely by the midterm election, there will be implications as to, you know, in the town halls that people are visiting and going to from the Hill, they're hearing quite clearly, we didn't ask for this. We weren't looking for this. This isn't what we expected. And this is leading to some potential economic risk, right? So if Trump wishes for his legacy to potentially be that of a recession on his watch and his clock, I think there are folks that are very concerned, including himself, about those implications. So I do anticipate a great deal of clarity in the course of the next, you know, this 90-day pause to emerge. And folks are suggesting there should be an off-ramp that's, you know, contemplated and investigated, which is, like I said, the thing I hear the most about is, and I'm hearing from the scholars, including a gentleman from Mark Bush that we spoke to from George Washington University, that the end goal could potentially be relocating supply chains here to North America, right? But there's a complexity in that. It's not done overnight. If you look at what Honda did over the course of the last 40 plus years in Ohio, it took a long time till they had the co-located capabilities and abilities, right? If you look at what Nissan did in Tennessee, or BMW in the area of South Carolina, those all took time to stand up multi-billion-dollar investments, yeah, right? The investment here in Ohio in the Intel Chips Act, a chip manufacturing facility built by the Taiwanese and the folks from Denmark, is it $8 to $10 billion per plant? They're building two of them here, $20 billion investment. It's going to take 5 years to get online. These aren't small investments, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just recently sold a 200,000-foot plus German company that has a large manufacturing facility in Lake County that, you know, that was a multi-year deal to get that business to come here. They're remaining strong here. They're just remaining strong under different management hands. But in terms of that, one of the things that besides looking out and trying to foresee and trying to structure around stability, one of the big concerns we've seen with onshoring, or at least nearshoring, has been kind of concern about whether or not it's actually onshoring or nearshoring, or if it's just a mechanism to avoid tariffs. And I'm curious, how have you seen that play out? I know we've had several manufacturers that we've dealt with that have essentially mentioned offhand that some of their nearshoring that was coming through Mexico, for example, was really just kind of a repackaging business that was going on and then moving it up into the United States. Do you think that's where some of the concern is coming through between Canada and Mexico and the United States? Or is it just a Trump rah-rah trying to move as much manufacturing into the U.S. proper?
So I do anticipate, right, there is always tax minimization strategies at play. Any good executive, any good high wealth individual that's part of your network is going to be looking for ways to minimize their tax burden, right? So if we talk about tariffs and we talk about exceptions to the tariff and we go back to that World Trade Organization and looking up the codes, one of the things Mark suggested to our audience last week was that they get their heads wrapped around exceptions to the process. Bringing chemicals in was the example he used in his particular illustration. If you bring chemicals in, they've always had a high tariff burden, not just recently. It will be exacerbated by the recent situations. But if you're bringing those in and you simply add a towel to it, it becomes a kit. And therefore, it is, you know, a towel to which you apply the chemicals and it's a kit to the consumer. You can minimize your tariff burden. So having the right understanding of the tariffs, potentially spending a small amount of money if you're several small businesses, you know, work with a joint legal counsel, right? Some sort of group effort to get your heads wrapped around how do we minimize our tariff burden. And so nearshoring, onshoring, there are ways to be creative. Depending on which of the tariffs we're talking about, there's less or more creativity that can be applied. But I think being a quasi or hiring a quasi expert to get your head wrapped around these things, spending a small amount of money on legal teams that can help you apply for relief from these things could be a great high value added activity.
So one of the things that, you know, we'd love to talk about is kind of how this is going to affect long term, or at least maybe even just in the short term as well, commercial real estate markets. And most of our audience are commercial real estate investors, developers or brokers. And their primary concern is going to be, hey, how's this going to affect my pocketbook? So in terms of that, I'm kind of curious how you see some of these trends playing out in the markets in terms of markets that you think could be most affected in terms of winners and potential losers.
Yeah. So I think for your target audience in general, there are things like the steel tariffs that I do not necessarily anticipate a great deal of modification. So the broad reaching 70 plus country tariffs are likely to somehow, I anticipate, find an easing, whether it's through legislation or the executive office or through, the courts. I anticipate they will find a way to have fewer tariffs in place. But things like the steel tariff, if you're talking about major infrastructure build outs in, whether it's residential properties or commercial properties, they have a great deal of, you know, steel, concrete, things of that nature that have implications to consider within them, right? So how do I ensure I have local sources for that steel? I heard last week a story from a customer that they have an AI that's checking. It was invented for the grocery industry to test area of origin, essentially of products that end up on the store shelves. They're now using it to test steel content to assure no Chinese impact, right? So one of the things we do from a Jagger perspective is encourage technology enablement across these challenges, right? So in order to get flexibility, in order to be able to consider the trade-offs, you can do a China plus one analysis in something we call advanced sourcing optimizer. A fancy way of saying, do when you're going out to market, whether it's through a GC or you're approaching your subcontractors directly, ensure you have transparency within your RFP or leverage technology such as Jagger from an RFP sourcing tendering perspective to gather some granularity about the bids. We hear about a lot of the subcontractors raising prices and then not having clawback provisions when the tariffs turned off. My brother's a small business owner. He sells window coverings. One of his suppliers put a 30% and said it was because of tariffs. And they said, even though they're paused, they're not taking that off. So the complexity he has to introduce to his customer and the implications to that person's top line growth are real considerations, right? So as you think about things as small as window coverings within your commercial properties, it's a real consideration. The other thing that we do on the tech side is we have some great AI capabilities with these large language models, ChatGPT type of capabilities, where you can conversationally engage with your contracts, understand the provisions, the T's and C's within your agreements, or put a legal template in place going forward to protect yourselves or minimize the impacts of tariffs are all things, I think, from a proper planning perspective that your leaders within your organizations can consider to minimize the impact to their consumers or into their investors, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. One of the things that we'd love to see if you can make some sense of is in terms of onshoring or nearshoring or potential tariff hiccups, do you think there's going to be regions of the United States that are most affected? And that could be most affected in both the short term in a negative way or a positive way, or even over the long term over the next, you know, 5 years?
No, I think you naturally have to look at your border areas, those closest to Mexico. Obviously, with the Canadian border being as vast as it is, there's contemplation of soft lumber tariffs that might be considered, for example, which is a huge resource that we get from Canada. So contemplations of that. The Canadian and Mexican agreement that was signed into law has a sunset provision next year, right? Incredibly unusual for a free trade agreement to have a sunset provision in it, but it has one, and that's coming up next year, right? So one could argue some of this is pre-positioning for leverage during those negotiations, right? There are exceptions in some of the auto clauses and auto tariffs that were contemplated on products that originate from Mexico or Canada. The automobile companies fought aggressively because they have lobbyists that are effective at doing so and have been doing so for a very long time to make sure their voices are heard. I encourage your leaders within your companies to let their representatives know the impact. Everybody loves a good story, right? Let's call it the Joe the Plumber story. Those echo chambers that the press and such create around the impact to small businesses and the implications for them, if they get those messages out through press, if they get those messages out to the representatives within DC so that they can think about ways to minimize the tax or tariff burdens that are able to be generated here, right? And I think we have to be very cautious about the lack of predictability of where we're headed, for investment happens with a level of predictability and uncertainty, kind of going full circle to where I started. Right. So I think those are some of the things they can do practically to prepare themselves and to think about. There's a 2026, there's midterm elections. Those are all opportunities for people to have their voices heard. But in the interim, there are ways to make sure that your voice, your impact as a small business is heard. Right. I will not be able to bring this investment into my local community because the steel tariffs have raised the cost of the building and our investment cannot carry that from a EBITDA impact perspective. Right. Okay, got it.
So if you're an investor or in either private markets or REITs, and you're looking at a variety of manufacturing businesses that or regions, where do you foresee the biggest risk potential is, looking at kind of how some of the trade war and tariff lineup is structured?
I think the biggest risk from my perspective is ensuring a diverse and flexible supply chain and strategy, right? So one of the abilities, again, back to the tech stack, is this concept of expressive bidding. We used to have to say, give us a bid on this. Now we have the ability to engage our supply market with, I want multiple bids. Give me 3, 4, 5 bids. Give me a bid that if I have this sustained level of business from you, you'll make a capital investment, right? So being able to analyze outside of spreadsheets in a very rapid iterative fashion, multiple bids from your supplier community so that you can maintain a, I'll call it elasticity or resiliency is the proper, I suppose, bantered around term right now to your supply chain is incredibly important. Now, more so than ever, I thought most of folks would have gotten their heads wrapped around these types of challenges during the pandemic. it turns out this one's got enough particulars or challenges that are unique to it that folks are having to go back to some of those basics. How do we do this at scale? How do we be able to analyze and then reanalyze when things change, right? The only constant is things will change.
Yeah, as soon as we get ready and prepared for, you know, another biologically driven black swan, then a political black swan hits us. So in terms of other potential black swans and strategies to mitigate them, I'm curious, before we get into our final four, what do you think the most effective mitigation tools that either manufacturers can use or anybody who's importing in general to avoid some of these potential risks to both the supply chain in general and just general price increases?
Look, from my perspective, one of the things I constantly find myself doing is, in this particular case, we'll call it a strategic imperative of having a tariff playbook. But the concept of a playbook is, you know, been around for a long time, won't go away. Like you said, we'll just have the next challenge that we have to deal with, right? And from my perspective, I have a sort of checklist I encourage people to go through from their analysis all the way through their execution, right? It starts with ensuring they have agility, ensuring they move with what I call velocity. I specifically choose velocity versus speed because velocity implies direction as well as speed, right? And be able to get through your data and have your steps and scenarios sorted. What are the scenarios that could be in place? Have and start with analysis, document those strategies, have contingencies, start to execute your plan. You've heard the term fail fast, right? But be willing to revisit and optimize your plan. Have the strategies in place so you understand the exposure. This goes all the way through to pricing guidance. Understand how you can mitigate it. Understand how you can avoid it. I am a big proponent as well as third-party intelligence. When I started my career, to do a large, I'll call it $500 million or $1 billion sourcing event that required a big investment in an RFP or an auction for that to take place, you had to do research on the market. You had to do research on the category or categories and the suppliers that are impacted there. You can now, for great affordable prices, get what used to take 2 to 3 months of preparation 20 years ago through AI. You can conversationally get information on the markets, on the categories, in an area we call supplier intelligence. And it gives you that, you know, for thousands of dollars where you can avoid potentially millions of dollars. And then I really encourage, Gordon, people to maintain a war room like mentality, right? Make sure they get the best and the brightest. If they have cross-functional teams, make sure they bring those resources to the table to brainstorm through and apply maximum creativity to ensure the most resilient outcome they can get.
So one of the ways that we like to try to pursue resilient outcomes is to try to, you know, sift through some of the bullshit that, you know, pardon my French again, that exists out there in the media landscape. And that, like, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And, you know, if you could hit one of the biggest ones on the head, what do you think we get wrong the absolute most as a general public about tariffs in the trade war?
So one of the things that most people thought this was, especially in it, most people generally aren't aware of tariffs. They don't understand them. There were two major inflection points on tariffs that happened in the Google searches last year that Mark walked us through. And I will tell you, the searches on Taylor Swift that he covered were 100x what those that were thinking about tariffs and searching on tariffs had in place, right? So what does this mean to us? How do we minimize it? It was contemplated as, well, we'd be able to give small businesses tax relief because we can raise money through tariffs. There is no way, no how, no shape, no reason where we can offset the $2 trillion that come in through personal things here. The tariffs today are responsible for $80 billion today. There's no way we can make up the personal trade thing. So I think being aware of and following this closely, and like I said, it's going to change through either legislation in the House and Senate and et cetera, standing up and doing something, the courts, the midterm elections, because the American populace will speak up. So you can anticipate it will change again. So being prepared, understanding that potentially his off-ramp is this foreign direct investment. Examples that we talked about is to incentivize people to be co-located here so we get jobs here and create the continuity. But we know it's proven fact time and time again by our economists that the lifeblood of America remains our small businesses. American exceptionalism has been around for 20 plus years. This latest wave with AI, they're suggesting, I heard conversations yesterday, that our GDP will go to 4, then 6% over the next 10 years. American exceptionalism is here to stay, right? And I think we have that to ride out. We have a resiliency in our populace, in our small businesses of continual investment and reinvestment and hiring that will take place because AI is a transformational change, right? And it's significant and it's meaningful.
So one of the meaningful things that we like to do on the podcast is go and do a thing called our Real Finds Final Four. And that's a nice way that we can wrap things up. And we can also learn a little bit more about you and a little bit more about kind of where we think the future on your unique area of expertise, tariffs, are going. So, and as well as just global trade in general. So first, for when we look at this, what do you think is going to have changed the most about global trade 10 years out?
I think from my perspective, as it relates to global trade, AI is 100% going to be the transformational change. The things that I've seen in AI, I am a big fan of mentoring. I got to where I was because people leaned in and paid it forward, as we say in the Buckeye State, in me, and I'm trying to return that back to others. I mentor our AI intelligence leader within our organization. AI is going to transform global trade substantially. Our ability to, as we talked about, use it to get across our contractual terms. There's this latest phase beyond, you've heard of machine learning, you've heard of LLMs or ChatGPT. The next one being bantered around is agentics AI. These agents that take action for us in the supply chain world that I live in, there is a tremendous amount of paperwork of digital data, right, that takes place at the more mature organizations. So getting our heads wrapped around predictive or prescriptive analytics as it relates to AI that's engageable by the humans to ensure safety stock levels, inventory levels, the implications to working capital is absolutely exciting. Gives me goosebumps to talk about where we are going to head based on the transformation that AI will deliver. So that'd be the first one I'd hit for you, Gordon.
And one of the things that we like to do besides go back and look at the future, and I'm already getting ahead of myself, is we like to go back and look at the past. And we have a lot of listeners on the podcast that are at least under the age of 30. We'd be curious to see if you could give us one little bit of advice you would have given yourself when you're starting off in your career.
I am thankful for those mentors, right? Look, I think at a foundational sense, we have three values at Jagger, right? Accountability and adaptability are absolutely paramount. The one thing you can assure is you need to build in accountability to yourself. You have one reputation. You have one way to build trust. You have one name, one reputation, and being able to have that at the core of what you're doing will not change, right? Introduce AI, introduce computers. There'll be distrust and mistrust, but how do I do that? How do I make myself and ensure I'm accountable to people. Adaptability is a hugely important thing, right? You must constantly reinvent yourself as an entrepreneur internally to my own company, despite being here 25 years. It's incredibly important to revisit that and think about that and think about what's changing and predict that. So those are the two things I suppose I'd whisper to myself as if I were able to go back in time.
So one of the ways that we like to get mentorship outside of reaching out to a mentor is looking at potential books or podcasts or, you know, periodicals, anything that we can gain insight into the mind of another and insight into industry. And I'm curious if you could recommend one book that would positively influence the career of another, what would it be?
So for your audience in particular, and I happen to be a small real estate investor, I started investing in rental properties in a campus community here when I was on campus because I had my own small business. It was a commercial and residential painting business. I read the Rich Dad Poor Dad series, right? So I think Robert's done a great job in those of having a mindset and a mind frame about how to contemplate and look at problems in a fundamentally different way. I challenge and mentor folks to think unconstrained. And I think that's a fundamentally critical skill set within an executive leader or in an entrepreneur is to think unconstrained. Then you can layer in your constraints. Then you can talk about risk mitigation strategies. But first, think unconstrained, right? So I think one of the things Robert did in that Rich Dad Poor Dad series, especially as it really relates to real estate investment for me, was helping me think not just through the financial numbers, which are incredibly important, but think in non-traditional ways to think about, you know, constantly be looking for a cheaper, more efficient, more effective way to do things, whether that's in my repair and maintenance schedules or in my lease agreements or things of that nature, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, Robert's a terrific way to get your foot in the door in commercial real estate and also kind of change kind of the way in which you perceive the world. One of the ways that we really like to look at that and in terms of the way we perceive the world and some of the gaps that exist in our own mindset is by talking to individuals like yourself. And so we're curious, and this is the whole reason for the podcast, so we're not going to let you get out of this question. Who the next person is that we should have on?
I really like the question. The next person we can have on, from my perspective, I encourage you, if you're wanting to stay on this tariff topic, I was enthralled leaning in, listening to Mark Bush. He's a George Washington professor. He's a Reagan conservative, but yet he could talk about seemingly a dry topic like tariffs and get people sitting up in their chairs, paying attention, understanding the history behind them, but more importantly, the variations in these. So I guess I would encourage you to reach out to Mark. I can facilitate an introduction if you like. I think that would be a great place if you want to continue the tariff topic.
We'd love to have that connection. And if somebody wants to connect with you after they've listened to the podcast, what's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, I think reach out via LinkedIn. You can see my initials there, K.O., Christian O'Mara. So K.O. O'Mara Jagger, or you can reach out to me on my mobile phone, which is available on LinkedIn as well. So that would be a great way to start the engagement with me and look forward to those dialogues and discussion.
Christian, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today, and we really appreciate having you on.
Thanks, Gordon. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks again to Christian. We appreciate his insights. If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like, a 5-star review. Any subscriptions and interactions that you have with us truly matter and help us continue to get quality guests. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lanfear with the Real Finds Podcast. Thank you for listening.